Well, welcome to Let's Talk with Marty Caldwell. Thank you for joining us today, and today we have a very interesting guest with us. My guest today is Michael Dresser. He is a national syndicated talk show host, and we'll be giving his website out. We are going to talk about something very important to every American, and with the upcoming election, that will affect you, so very important that you stay tuned for what we have to share with you. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today and discussing these important issues. Let's get a little bit of background about you, too. You have been a radio talk show host for how many years now?
Oh, 27 plus.
27, wow. And you have discussed all kinds of topics. You are now in Wisconsin, right?
Right.
And lived in Alaska for a while.
25 years in the interior.
Wow. So you have got a lot of experience, and you've heard a lot of people, a lot of guests on your show, and have some real insight, and this is one reason I'm having you on the show. You know, one of the things I want to talk about today, we've got a very important election coming up, and there are some real issues that are at stake for us in this next election, more so than we've seen in many years, and for many people that are voting this time, for the first time in their entire life, they're going to be voting on some very important things that can affect the rest of their life. Let's talk about that a little bit. What do you see that's the real issue at stake?
Well, there's really one issue at stake, and it's the fundamental theory of government, how government should be structured, Marty. One, obviously, is capitalism. That's private ownership, individual liberty, low governmental influence, and that's emphasized. Democracies sometimes tend towards capitalism, obviously. That's our free market society. Mm-hmm. The other is socialism, where economic equality, state ownership, full governmental control is emphasized. I don't like to use these words, but communism and fascism are extreme of socialism. So really, what we have to look at between the two candidates, do we want to stay with a free market society, stay with a democracy, stay with capitalism, or tend towards socialism and globalism? That's really what we have to look at between the two candidates.
So when people are going for the first time to vote, you know, we've got some first-time voters that are really passionate about this, and they're very attracted sometimes to how the media will make out one candidate over another. And maybe snowballed because they think this is going to be great, something new and fresh. What can you say to those first-time voters?
Oh, boy. Yeah, Marty, that will take about 5 hours. It's very hard to have a lens to see through what you're dealing with. There's two lenses we look through. First is an economic lens, financially what it's going to do to us, and then the philosophical end. The young voters are going to look at the philosophical end. I've heard many, many people at this stage of the game would say, you know, why are you going to vote for Obama? Well, he's cool, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is. They have no concept of what to grasp. I'm not saying don't vote for the man. That's not where I'm at with this. But the mainstream media today, there's a bleed between news and entertainment, mm-hmm. and we get lost in the middle of it. So they're going to have to do a lot of studying. Thank God we've got the Internet today. Most everything is transparent. They can make up their own mind.
Right.
But you get people that are so extreme to one side or the other that they tend to put blinders on.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very true in this election, too. The Internet, we didn't have, even just in the last election, as much as we do now on the social media sites, and people putting up their own videos and their own thoughts. And I think a lot of the younger voters have access to that, where the older voters do not. They're going on wisdom and past history. Do you feel that's true?
I think, I'm kidding. Let's take a step besides wisdom and history. Let's look at the younger voters today. Look what they're learning in school. The schools are socializing them. And there is a sense of entitlement that goes on today, which happens to be one of the main streams of socialism.
Mm-hmm.
So when you really ask some of the kids, the younger ones, 18 to 20 years old, what is it that you want in someone? Well, we want someone who's going to let everybody into the country, and everybody should get a share of everything, and yada, yada. Let them go out and get a job, let them get a business, let them buy a house, and watch how fast they become a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not a conservative. I'm right down there in the middle of the rotor.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, It's based on the culture and how you're brought up and how you see your world. And a lot of the young ones today see their world based on it's all about me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's very true. Do you think a lot of what's happening right now has to be the chaos has been transpired through the media? Do you think that's been a big part of where we've been hyping up me and buy more and get more and charge more?
Oh, absolutely. And part of the media is, you know, we move when we're frightened, and that's what the media does. The media will move you based on where they can see an emotion going.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a movie, and you You watch the movie, somebody says something, you cry, you laugh, you're fearful. You walk out of that movie with a suggestive idea. Same thing with the media. We live in a voyeurism kind of a very fast-paced, microwavable world today. And if it's not, if it takes too long to learn, we're out of it. If it takes too long to research, we're out of it. So we do, we live our lives based on what we hear, and we live vicariously through through the news media. We live through movies, and some people actually live through soap operas.
And I think even on the media, I think a lot of people are just so addicted to the internet that that's their persona. They just their whole personality is tied up in that. And I think we're used to supersizing, instant gratification, and the entitlement. I think you're right on target with that. I think a lot of kids and a lot of people in their 20s and 30s have that, and reality is crumbling down around them. Today, just hearing about the stock market and about how many homes are closing in foreclosure, it's real scary. Do you feel that we have an out? I mean, are we going to spiral down until we just...
I don't think so. I think we're going to come back. You know, this bailout package in and of itself is going to do some good, money going to the banks, and they'll be credited, et cetera. But we've always come back. This is not the first time we've hit this kind of a problem. It's happened to us 6 times since the 1920s. But let's look at where that problem came from. It came not only from the banks and the lenders, but it also came from those people, those hedge fund people at Wall Street that were pinning down the number of what a barrel of oil should cost. You know, they were going 2-3 times the value. They didn't have to put any money out. It was a credit card, quote unquote.
Right.
So effectively, those things we have to take into consideration. Wall Street had a piece of it. The lenders had a piece of it. And the way it works basically is this. You buy a house and the bank gives you a loan. The bank then turns around and sells that loan to someone else, and they package that loan up with 5 or 6 or 10 or 12 other loans, and then they package it up from there. And by the time you're done with it, it's leveraged maybe 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you buy securities based on what that leveraging is. So you may buy into a security that's worth $1 billion, but most of that money, 80% of that money, is phantom money. That's where it fell down.
Yes, and I think, too, I think people were sold a lot of, bill of goods for their homes, and any dip, loss of business or health issues, and I think they failed. It was a house of cards, so it was very difficult. Let's talk about, Mike, a little bit about businesses. But I, for anybody joining us late, I want to share with you today we're talking to Michael Ray Dressler. He's a national syndicated talk show host and in Wisconsin. And, Michael, let's talk about your website so people can visit you also on your website.
Oh, sure. It's www.michaeldressershow.com. That's M-I-C-H-A-E-L. DRESSERSHOW.com.
Okay, great. And let's go. You know, I'm a small business owner, and so are you, and a lot of our friends are. Small businesses are really taking a hit right now, too. What are the consequences of taxing businesses?
Well, obviously, and I'm going to say obviously, I don't understand why most people don't see this when you talk about taxing a business over $250,000. Let's take your business, all right? So let's say, for instance, that we're going to tax your business, and we're going to say that the minimum wage has to increase also. So let's tax your business. If I tax your business, that's more money out of your pocket. You have ongoing and continuous expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if all of a sudden you have an added expense to run your business, where does that money come from, Marty? That money comes from you having to increase your price for your goods, your services, your products, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So in essence, what we do when we tax, we really take away the incentive for someone to increase their business, to allow more people to come to work for them, and that list goes on. So by taxing the people who are in business and giving them the burden, they throw the burden back on the people that they're trying to save.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it's kind of a reversible cause and effect. Let's say minimum wage. Let's say I'm going to pick a number. Minimum wage is $6. They want it to go up to $9. And you're paying everybody that works for you minimum wage. Well, what happens? Same thing. You increase. You've got extra expenses. Where does it come from? It comes from the consumer coming in, buying your goods, services, and products.
Right. All comes back to the consumer.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So now I'm that guy out there that's making $3 or $4 an hour more. Oh, good for me. But I'm spending $10 or $15 more on the goods and services that I have to buy elsewhere.
Right.
So it has some very interesting consequence to it. They're not looking at this all the way through.
Yeah, I think it's very true, and healthcare has gone up, but it's something that I would want to have more control over too. What are your feelings about healthcare? You know, the naturalization of healthcare program that
Keep it privatized. Mm-hmm. let me give it to you this way. Have you ever dealt with the IRS?
Yes.
Okay, the IRS is a large governmental collection agency, but it's a large bureaucracy, and I think there's 66,400 pages in the IRS manual, right?
Wow.
You couldn't lift it. Mm-hmm. Now, it's very confusing. Most of the people at the IRS have no concept of what the next guy knows because it's done in divisions. One division works on this part of your taxes, another division works on that part and goes from desk to desk. Now, there's a lot of confusion, and there's a lot of misinformation, and there's a lot of non-common terminology that they just don't get the job done. Can you imagine that with the health care?
I can't imagine, especially if someone is sick and they're trying to get this is bad enough, you know, trying to work with insurance companies, but now to work with the health care in a situation like that, I think it's difficult. I've traveled to Europe. I've spoken to people, and so many of them complain about the health care they have because it's what they're proposing over here, and I cringe to think of it.
Let's go to England. Let's go to England and talk about health care. You say it's free health care, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they paying $7-$9 a gallon for gas?
Right. It's up $10, almost $10 at times.
Okay, yeah, it's got to come from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
Obviously taxes are the way, that's the government's revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there's a budget every year, and they budget out for what they have to have, and based on whether they're going to meet the budget or not meet the budget, they're going to increase taxes, leave them the same way, or do whatever they have to come out with some kind of a balance.
Right.
Now, that's another thing. We borrow money, we borrow billions of dollars a month because of the deficit. A lot of it is the trade deficit. A lot of it has to do with all of the businesses that we outsourced. And now we're in a position whereby we're importing, but we're not exporting.
Right.
We're not exporting because it costs us too much to export. By the time you put in Social Security costs and so on and so forth, employee costs, that the other people that are in foreign countries don't have, we can't compete in the global marketplace.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we run into a very interesting thing when we look at the total scope of where we are. Little by little, we put ourselves in a position where we've had to become global.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? I'll call you at 4 o'clock in the morning when I remember his
mm-hmm.
name. The book was Death of the West.
Mm-hmm.
And what he projected within the next 50 years, that we would be a third world country. Now, not in ethnicity, but in mindset. And you can see the writing on the wall
right.
with that. We are moving towards that every day unless somebody puts a stop to it and starts to hit the brakes. Because
yes.
if we don't hit the brakes, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, I think, too, a lot of times, and I'm thinking the younger generation, is they feel like they can add all these additional benefits on to the lifestyle they have now, not realizing that these new changes are going to change the lifestyle they have.
Well, sure. Okay, let's touch something else with the young ones today. I've heard of a lot of them say, open up the borders. Everybody has the right to come over here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
See, what they're not looking at, this is another example of not looking at something unilaterally. I could not, in my heart of hearts, not want someone to come over here that wanted to really live a good lifestyle and do the best they can do for themselves. But what about the drug traffickers? What about the gangbangers?
Illegals,
yeah. And what about the human traffickers?
Mm-hmm.
See, we're not looking at those things. That border right now is an absolute war zone. But
mm-hmm.
you have people with a particular mindset that are not down there living in Disneyland saying, well, we should give everything to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, they haven't seen the reality of all, too. Michael, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue on with Michael Ray Dressler. He's a national syndicated talk show host. And today we're talking about the truth and what we're facing in this next election, how important it is. We'll be right back at this quick break. Thank you, and welcome back to Let's Talk with Marty Caldwell. And I'm Marty Caldwell. I'm your host today. And today my guest is Michael Ray Dressler. He's a national syndicated talk show host. And, Michael, let's go ahead and give your website out again for people that are listening so they can visit your site and learn more about you.
Sure. It's www.michaeldressershow.com.
Okay. And before we left, we were talking a little bit about, immigration and about the borders and how we find that a lot of people weren't here during the 20s. They don't remember that. They don't remember a lot of the last recession we had, issues, and this is all new. And kids are scared. Even kids that aren't going to be voting are asking questions of their kids. Some of the schools are talking about the election. Some of them are being fairly biased because they're coming into it on a biased thing, too. What can you recommend to people that have children right now in trying to get a fair view about what's happening in this upcoming election?
Stay away from a single-minded issue in the voting. Sarah Palin is absolutely anti-abortion. Let's say that somebody decides that in their life that that's a way of life and that's okay. What has that got to do with running a country? What has that got to do with the administration and the business of running a country? I just happened to pick that particular area out, Marty. But it's the single issues that kill us. You've got to look at the entire package of somebody presenting themselves to you.
That's right. That's right. And it's just like looking and saying the car has air conditioning I don't like, but the everything else looks really great on it.
Absolutely. And so what we do is we look at one thing and then, or we negate what that person has to offer by one particular thing. Oh, they had a picture in a bikini bathing suit 10 years ago, so that means that they'll never be able to do anything in public, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I'm saying that, you know, ethically, yes, keep it together. Morally, yes, keep it together. But at the same time, take an overall look at what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. We are right now in an economic situation, no question. But we also are in a security situation. The world is very deadly right now, and we don't know what's going to happen. If we go back to the First and Second World War, we had an enemy that was definable. We knew it was Germany, we knew it was Japan, and so on and so forth. We have an undefinable enemy right now, so we've had to learn to fight a completely different type of war.
What do you think our enemy is, our enemies is in plural?
Enemies in plural, I think it's an extreme Islamo-fascist who believes that if you don't believe their way, that you should die. Let's talk about the word integrity. The word integrity means that how you feel inside matches what you do outside. Will you agree with that?
I agree.
Okay, that's integrity. Now, if I kill my children, do I have integrity?
Yeah.
Interesting question.
Very.
Okay. So, As an American, is the way I was brought up, that's not integrity, it's horrible. But what if I was brought up in the Middle East and they have something called an honor killing? And an honor killing is that if your wife or your kids insult you in public, or you think they do, you can kill them, and it's perfectly legal.
Wow.
So we had this happen, four or five months ago. There was a cab driver who killed his young daughters. They were going out with American boys. And he took off, he went to the Middle East. But the point is that the biggest enemy are the people who think that we should die because we don't believe the way they believe.
Right.
We're very sensitive to different religions. We're sensitive to ethnicity. We're sensitive to gender here. But if you go to Iraq today, and in certain areas where it's not controlled, if you're a Christian, you die. They're knocking on doors saying, are you a Christian? And if you say yes, they'll shoot you. See, we're expected to live, and I'm not saying to go to doors and shoot somebody if they're not what you are, but at the same time, we're expected to keep a particular standard that other people aren't keeping. The other side of that is this. If I come to this country, I come because I'm running away from something. I want something here that is offered to me that isn't offered to where I came.
Great point. That's so very true. And that's why most people do. They came to this country and a great sacrifice in the early years because of that.
Yeah, but why make the country that I left like the country that I'm in?
There is a problem right there, and I totally agree. And I don't think people stop and think about that. And why do you think that is?
You know what? For the first time in 27 years, you stopped me with that one. What I think that is that there are people who are coming here who are not coming here because of America. They're coming here because of what they think they can have, and they want to bring what they have with them. There were people years and years ago who came to this country. My father came over to this country. He was at Ellis Island. But people came together, and they molded, they bonded, and they became Americans. What we have today are different groups fighting each other.
Different immigrants, different types of immigration, different needs and wants.
And so they do it because they know no better, and they do it also because we train them to do it. You know, I had three thoughts go through my head when you asked the question. And they're being trained to do it. We are politically correct. We are sensitive to people, yada, yada. And so they're looking for a problem before it even happens.
Mm-hmm. And what can we do then? What can we do as the average American to help, you know, we want to, of course we all want to grow, but this country was built on values and standards that have upheld for many, many years very, very well. And I would hate to see it all become, as you said, a communist-type country.
Well, Marty, let's touch on that. You know, I was brought up to believe a particular way, all right? And I did Christmas in the schools when I was a kid, and I sang Christmas carols. And when and as I grew, I stood up at football games. I said the Pledge of Allegiance, and I did all of those things. When you have people that are Americans today that refuse to do the Pledge of Allegiance, mm-hmm. that walk out on the Pledge of Allegiance and do all of these quote-unquote anti-American things, what it does, it gives the people who do not like us impetus to be stronger with who they are. Mm-hmm. Now, I can't remember the name of the Vietnamese general that was running the opposition, but in his memoirs, the book he wrote after the Vietnam War, said after the Tet Offensive, they lost the war, Marty. They were over. It was done. But they watched the peace movement, and they garnered strength and support from the people here telling us to get out. And they continued on, and I don't know how many American lives that it cost. So realistically, what we're looking at is the more we do the anti-Bush, the more we do the anti-this and the anti-that, and step across the border and say things anti-American, what we're really doing is giving those people who want to harm us a lot of ammunition.
Right. They're leaving a thread there they can pull apart, and the threads that America was built on. And it saddens me when I go to a game or I go to an event and I see people that are not taking off their hats or putting their hand to their heart and really taking that moment to really say, thank God I am an American. And a lot of times I think teaching our children, I'm very big into education with kids, and I think it's extremely important that we pass this on to our children. But, again, if parents didn't teach this to the last generation, they're not going to teach that to this generation. And we've got so many people that say, you know, just be a free spirit and do whatever you want. It's very sad. I think a lot of our ancestors would roll over in their graves if they could see what happened has happened, and if we don't slow it down, and if we don't make a stand on ourselves. So I come back to the same question, Michael. What can us as individuals do? What do you think we can do today as one?
Okay, let me build to that, okay? A couple of things that you talked about I want to touch on for a moment. There's something called the clear and present danger. Basically, that's the law that said you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. They'll get hurt. So the clear and present danger basically says if you're saying something that will cause danger to being an American, to the government, to something, that there's a law against that you can't do it. All right. Mm-hmm. So where do you draw the line between that and what's called treason?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting question, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, look at Hollywood today. Look at the people that say what they say about the President of the United States, about America, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What was the comment out of Obama about all we do is we're killing innocents in Iraq and so on and so forth. You see, this is the kind of rhetoric that those people who do want to see us harmed, they absolutely love that because it gives them impetus to move on and do what they do. Now, I want to touch on education. You just talked about that. We have to define what education is. Most people say education, they throw a lot of money into it, and what you end up with is a lot of brick and mortar and no substance to the education.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cities that I remember hearing about recently, the 8th graders, 12% of the 8th graders in the inner city could read and do mathematics, do arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
So where is the education? Is it money being poured into it, or is it the definition of education, and or is it disciplining the children today?
Mm-hmm.
You can't discipline today.
That's right.
You know, years ago, if your kid stepped out of line, you know, a little whack in the rear end, and that was it, and they didn't do it again, and everything
mm-hmm.
was fine. Nobody
yeah.
ran to the counselors. But you do that today, the next morning, the kid's going to show up with his attorney, and
mm-hmm.
you've got people at your doorstep ready to throw you in jail.
Right.
See, there's got to be some form of discipline. There is no discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Kids today don't have to learn if they don't want to learn.
Mm-hmm. I think, and it's hurting them later on. So many of them can't spell, and they can't. They're having a very difficult time even getting through college too, unless they're cheating on it too.
Well, Marty, let me answer the question now. All of that brought to the question about what can the average person do. Take control. Get it back. Take control of your kids. Take control of your family. Take control of your life.
Yeah, and I think I'd like to add to it, too, is I think people need to instill back the family night, family dinners. I think so often we have dinner in front of the TV set. Our kids don't have that bond. I know that when I have family dinners, the kids love it because we sit down. I have them turn off their cell phones. They take their pods out of their ears, and this is a no-cell phone time. You can't be text messaging during dinner. And we sit, and we actually have to interact with each other. And I believe that bringing that back on a simple level that actually will save you money by cooking at home, and when I say cooking at home, you can get something already pre-made if you have to, but taking that time to actually sit down, do not answer the phone, do not answer text messaging, and spend at least a half an hour with your family and your kids talking about what happened in their day, how they feel, and what they're hearing so that you can correct anything that you feel it has been erroneously given to them. Because if you're not influencing your children, the people that they are around each day will be influencing your children for you. And you'd be very surprised on the exposure they're having. So I think, for me, that's what my suggestion is. Because a lot of people say, well, what can I do, what can I do? And sitting right there in their own home in front of them and every day running in and out of their house.
Marty, let me give you what the problem is. And let's go back 100 years ago. In their great American frontier, parents taught their children the skill that were needed to survive in a very hostile environment, right? Mm-hmm. They taught them how to shoot. They taught them how to ride. They taught them how to farm, how to fish. And in that time, children would typically go off to a one-room schoolhouse for a year or so. They learned to read and write, maybe, and a little simple arithmetic. But the skills they needed to survive were taught to them, and here it is, by their parents. Mm-hmm. And for that reason alone, children looked up to their parents.
And grandparents. The nucleus of the family has disintegrated because we have now people moving all over the country.
Well, that was it. You know, they respected the man who taught them how to ride and shoot, the woman who taught the girls how to bake and to sew. See, life was simple, and so were the survival skills. Mm-hmm. And the kids thought that anybody who knew much about those things, they knew what they were talking about,
cool.
And they knew right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Now, let's fast forward it. Let's fast forward it to a highly specialized commercial society, a society in which children no longer, they don't learn survival skills from their parents. They don't necessarily follow in the vocational footsteps of their parents. You see, all this subtly tended to undermine the morality of the moral authority, of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
How, and you can ask that, by making the kids less dependent on them in so many areas of life. Increasingly, and here it goes, it's the state that assumed educational functions that were once left to the parents. So learning how to drive a car, that was the modern equivalent to riding a horse. They don't do it from their mom and dad. Now they go to driver's ed. So mm-hmm. you see how the parents have been diminished in prestige, and all of a sudden they're not the disciplinarians and they're not the moral authority.
Well, let me bring this up real quick. My daughter's learning to drive right now, and I take her. And I feel like I need a Valium before I get in the car with her. But, I tell you, it's been some of the best times to drive during the day and the night. And we go for about an hour drive.
Yeah.
And, first it was like, okay, no radio, no talking. She said, Mom, I have to learn to talk when I drive. And I thought, okay, touche, you're right. And we have the best conversation, just her and I, in the car.
Yeah.
Because we're together. We're paralleling together. And I just feel like it was a hassle at the beginning because I had to cancel a lot of appointments. But you know what? It's turned out to be the best thing.
Marty, you were teaching her survival skills. You were the authority.
Right, and she respects me for it. She has moments when her mom is a nerd, but the majority of the time she's very, very happy. And I'm not saying I'm a super mom by any means. I'm just saying here's one area that you can actually just do, and that can happen after work too. Michael, we're running into the end of the program right now. I want to get your last thoughts on some of your thoughts that you would like to share as far as the globalization of America. Your just last thoughts that can kind of people can take away from here on what that would mean to America the way we know it today.
Well, let me tell you one of the biggest things that we need to do, Marty, and we need to have common definitions of things anymore. If you ask 5 or 10 people what an American is, you're going to probably get 5 or 6 or 7 different answers today. And that's one of the things that we don't have anymore is commonality and definition, because without the commonality and definition, we're going down different roads together.
Mm-hmm.
We don't come to the table values neutral. Mm-hmm. We come with some kind of a philosophical, some kind of a philosophical, I can say that, philosophical mm-hmm. bent. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we come in prejudiced before we sit down. If we can come in values neutral.
And that's fear. That comes into fear then. We're all living in fear.
Yeah, and leave it all aside and sit down and negotiate at the table. It's like Hillary Clinton. I don't like her. I never will like her, and there's nothing that's going to get me to like her. But if the woman would have become president, she would have become my president. That's mm-hmm. the problem, Marty.
Yes.
Once the election's over, we don't come back together again, and we self-neutralize. Mm-hmm. So if there's one thing we could do is, A, get common definition, a common direction forward, and come together so we're not neutralizing ourselves. We are the most powerful power in this world. There's nothing that could stand toe-to-toe to us militarily. Yeah. You know how the enemy's going to beat us? They're going to watch us implode from within.
Right. Well, Michael, you have shared so much today, and I so appreciate all your insight and all you're doing. Again, we're talking today with Michael Ray Dresser, with a national syndicated talk show host. Michael's website is MichaelDresserShow.com, correct, Mike?
That's it, MichaelDresserShow.com.
All right. I really appreciate you being on the show and sharing so much. And until later on, this is Marty Caldwell, and let's talk with Marty Caldwell. If you'd like to visit my site, it's Marty Caldwell, MARDIE, Caldwell, CALDWELL.com. Take care, God bless, and we'll talk to you next time.